going to call the meeting to order. We have a number of bills today, and we're going to be starting on our omnibus health bill. And actually, if you look at the agenda, members, we'll see that we're going to be starting dealing with House File 1993, which I will be proposing that we delete everything that's in that that existing law. That was a bill from last year that had to do with pentapoles. We're not doing the utility pentapoles. If anybody's concerned, that was something we tried to make clear. But we are going to amend that. And I believe Representative Benson, I'll move House File 1993. Representative Benson, I believe you have an amendment.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 1993DE1.
And the amendment is before us. Do you want to explain a little bit about what the amendment is?
The amendment provides an opportunity for the Commissioner of Human Services to seek a federal waiver from the Department of Agriculture for a supplemental nutrition program for children who have severe food allergies. And the second one is an open appropriation. In case the committee is able to find some resources from the general fund having to do with appropriating money for food shelves.
Great. So we can be hopeful up until the last minute. Anyway, thank you for that amendment. And I believe we have a parent to talk to us about the need for us to seek that federal waiver. Amy?
Might we vote on the amendment?
Let's put the amendment before us. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. I think we do have a quorum. The amendment is adopted. We just did get a quorum. Okay. I wonder if Ms. Goodland would come before us and discuss with us how this might be helpful to her and her family. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Amy Goodland, and I have a son who is 16 months old. His name is David James Goodland. He was born on November 18th of 2008. He was 8 pounds, 13 ounces, and 21 and a half inches long. He was term. He was a very beautiful, bright, and healthy baby. We went home, and he developed jaundice, and we got a light bed brought to our home. After that, he was up every hour on the hour for at least 4 months straight. He would eat, and he would eat, and he would instantly start throwing up everything that he would eat. Couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. Went to the doctor, and as most people would know, doctors tend to somewhat kind of go, yeah, you're a new mom, and, you know, kind of blow you off when your son's saying, babies cry, until they saw him throw up. And it was so violent that they instantly brought us to have an upper GI tract and thought he had pyloric stenosis. He does not have pyloric stenosis. However, he has severe acid reflux, and they prescribed him Prevacid for my son, which is $45 a jar to fill, and we had to fill it every week to keep it potent enough to have any type of effect for my son. After that, thought the reflux was under control, they wanted to look at this rash that he had that was covered his body. They kept saying that it was baby acne. However, it was painful. He would throw himself on the ground and roll around. He would lay in his bed and turn his head over and over until he had an open wound around his head. He'd have scabs and pus all over his head. So we got referred to a dermatologist who said, let's try this, give him oatmeal baths. And nothing helped. It only made it worse. So we got referred to Dr. Kenneth Bloom, who is a dermatologist for children. At that point, David was 4 months old, wasn't growing. He was under 14 pounds still at that point in time. We went to see Dr. Bloom, and he asked about his allergies. Well, at about 2.5 months old, we had his allergies tested, and they came back negative. So he said, it doesn't make sense. Let's just have him tested again. So we went to Dr. Bloom to have the test redone, and they came back that he had allergies to wheat, egg whites, peanuts, whey, Sasien, and a slight allergy to soy milk. Because I was unaware of these allergies, I was continuing to eat those foods, and he was breastfed baby until he was 13 months old. So everything that I was giving to him was causing him pain and basically poisoning my son, who couldn't grow. The only thing on the Minnesota standard test that he was not allergic to was egg yolks. Instantly stopped eating all those foods, and the doctor prescribed him another things for eczema, a number of things for eczema. Steroid ointment, Dermasmooth, which is an oil that covers his body when he has a breakout of eczema head to toe, Protopic, another ointment that is not a steroid base, so we can use it every day because his body cannot go without having these. Antibacterial ointment, so when he does have open wounds all over his body, we can cover him on those. It's like a Neosporin almost. An Atarax, which is an anti-anxiety and anti-itch medicine for my four-month-old son. And when we would do this, when we don't use the Atarax, we use Benadryl, and we give him Benadryl four times a day, still to this day. And we are instructed to give my son bleach baths in order to kill the bacteria that is on the eczema. We were also referred to an allergist at that point to give him, because of the change in my diet, I was starting to lose my milk, and I had to start giving him formula. This formula was Nutramigen, which is a very expensive formula, and the formula has proteins broken down before the child has it to help with digestion. However, it is still casein-based, so it made my son's skin even worse. The day before his first birthday, I made a horrible mistake and had my mom, who's my daycare provider, give him lactose-free formula, not knowing enough about allergies that lactose-free does not mean dairy-free. He instantly started going into anaphylactic shock, and his throat was so closed he couldn't swallow his saliva anymore. They gave him a big dose of steroids and Benadryl to calm his skin, and we saw the allergist the next day, and he said, now we just need to try soy milk. He has a slight allergy to soy, so it was just we're constantly treating something that we're just going backwards on. About 1 to 2 months later, my darling boy woke up screaming uncontrollably, trying to rip the skin off of his chest, quite literally. Nothing I could do. Anytime I would try and hold him, touch him, he would scream uncontrollably because me touching his skin that was on fire and burning made it worse. So I just had to put him in his bed after trying for 2 hours, and he just threw himself around the bed, thrashing until he finally cried himself to sleep. We brought him back to Dr. Bloom, and he was very concerned that my son was not growing at all. So he referred us to see Dr. Patrick Mueller. Did an exam on him, did some blood work, and he ran through another allergy test, and his allergies have gotten worse. His allergies went from a 9 to a 27 in wheat allergies. They put him on, they had us go to Children's Hospital for a feeding clinic. This feeding clinic has a nutritionist, dietitian, a speech therapist, a occupational therapist, and a nurse practitioner to do some reviews for him and to see what would be helpful. The conclusion is his allergies do not sound, they said that we need to be on a formula that is a prescription-only basis. This is going to cost my family over $200 a month just for the formula. However, he might start growing because he's now down to 19.9 pounds, and considering he was born at almost 9 pounds when he was born, he's just not growing. In conclusion, we think the child with allergies does not sound like a huge issue. However, it's crippling and a handicap for my family. I can't bring him anywhere. I can't go to church and drop him off at the daycare because I'm afraid someone's going to give him a goldfish cracker or something that anybody is. It's very easy for people to do that, and I can't wrong people to do it. I want to put a little sticker on him that says, "Do not feed me," everywhere he goes. I do have a four-year-old son as well, and he does not have allergies, but he is constantly having to be his little brother's protector and looking out for him so that he doesn't grab his big brother's milk. And when I look online, I see a lot of people for support groups, and it terrifies me that my husband and I have blown through every piece of savings that we have. We're trying to figure out if we can move, but our house is worth nothing. To try and move in back in with my parents or something to cover this. But there's a lot of people that are a lot worse than us, and they're it scares me that people would just not be able to do these things, and then there's children just suffering, and they're just constantly treating this. I think it would be very beneficial to be able to have some assistance to buy food. Pretzels for my son are $9 for a bag of pretzels. Cookies are $8 for a bag of pretzels. Like I said, the formula that he's going to be on is going to be $200 at least a month just for his formula alone. It's very paralyzing for our family, and I would really appreciate for this. I think it would be very helpful. That's all I can
say. Thank you, Ms. Goodland.
Any comments or questions from committee members? Well, I'd just like to say I laud your incredible love for your child and the work that you've been doing to take good care of him. And I really hope that we can get this waiver. Representative Benson?
Oh, Madam Chair, I just was thinking, we have heard a lot of discussion and debate about the health care bill that was just signed by the President. And one of the provisions is that children with conditions cannot be denied insurance. So I'm hopeful that you will follow that up and see if there might not be some relief for you and your family. And that bill will be in effect very quickly this year. So I'll just pass that as a, I'm sure you've thought about it yourself, but this is a classic example of why that legislation was so critical.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments from committee members? Well, I want to thank you for making the trip to come in today. I appreciate that. And this bill will be our basis members for our omnibus health department bill. Yes, Representative House.
I just have a question.
Sure.
Madam Chair, I came in a little late. Is it 1993?
Yes, it is.
Then I have a question on one word in the bill.
Okay. Go ahead, yes. Representative House.
You would delete. Oh, so there's. You already deleted that.
We deleted the. This has nothing to do with pentapoles anymore. That is all deleted, and we're just. It's just the number that we are using as a basis for our omnibus bill that we need to put together for health and for the health department.
Gotcha.
And the other, some of the other bills we have today will be going into that. Hopefully, we'll see. Thank you again for your testimony, Ms. Goodland. Members, I'd like to just go a little bit out of order because yesterday we ran out of time, and the next bill on the agenda was the House File 3678, my bill that deals with the challenge fund, and I'd like to challenge fund bonding, and I'd like to just get that done because I don't want to run out of time again. and I have some positive amendment to share with you, members, and so. I think what I might do. Okay, I guess I'll just do the bill from here. I guess I will move then House File 3678, members, and we have an amendment. I want to take off the amendment that we had before, and I think Mr. Bruce, he has been working with us on an amendment that we'll replace it with. So I guess my first motion is to take off the previous amendment, which was the DE. Was it DE3? What was that? Excuse me. It was the A1 amendment, and we're. So I would like to move that, members, to put the bill back in the order that. We can then amend it with a new amendment that we've been working with Mr. Burris on. So if you're okay with that, I was on the prevailing side, so I'd like to move to remove my own amendment. Okay, any questions on that? Yes. That's what we have to do. That's my understanding of what we have to do, correct? This is what I was advised earlier. Is this not correct? Anybody? Mr. Burris, can you tell me?
Madam Chair, members, I think the procedure would essentially be to move reconsideration of that.
Reconsideration
and then vote on the prevailing side, and then you could the original proposer of the amendment, which I believe was you, could just withdraw it, and then it would be effectively removed from the from the bill.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. Any questions, members?
Madam Chair.
Representative Severson.
Yep. Can you refresh the committee on what the amendment entailed?
Sure.
On this particular bill?
Sure. Basically, what we were trying to do with the bill, as previously amended, was to allow the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to issue a new kind of bonds called challenge bonds, and those would basically allow the issuing of state bonds that would be used for all the purposes of the existing challenge fund. And what I can tell you is that some of the questions that were raised in the discussion, like, well, do we have the full faith and credit of the state behind it and so on, have caused us to think about changing some of the language there and putting, and I'd like to tell you about that in a minute with a different amendment. So we're just taking that previous proposal off of the bill. Okay. And going forward with it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure. So the motion is to reconsider the A1 amendment, which was put on in the last time we had this bill before us. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Okay, then I will withdraw the amendment, the A1 amendment, and we have a new amendment which should be in your packet. And it is the A3 amendment. Okay. And what I'm going to do, just so that we make sure that we really, everybody really understands this, I'm going to ask Mr. Burris to take us through this amendment and explain as he does the differences here. And I want to just say to members, I think this really solves some of the concerns that people were expressing and that the agency was expressing. And we did try to call the agency this morning to talk with him about it and did not reach either Ms. Orr or Ms. Blankenship. And I don't know if there's anybody else here from the agency, but it's... Oh, is she? Okay, well, maybe she'll come back. So, Mr. Burris, would you like to describe the amendment?
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, I'll start actually with the original bill. As was mentioned, this provides bonding authority for up to $30 million for the agency to create what is essentially a new type of bonds for that would be the revenue would be implemented through the challenge program. And under the original bill, the funding for the debt service comes from a standing appropriation from the general fund of up to $2.4 million annually, and that would cover the debt service on the bonds that are issued. And then moving into the amendment, there are sort of two parts to it. The first part is introducing a new article that is reduces the base appropriation for the challenge program by $2.4 million, and that starts at 1.5 in the amendment and goes through 2.13. So it's a base appropriation reduction of $2.4 million. That's in fiscal year 2011 and out through the tails and onward. And then there's a small technical change in at 2.16. It's mostly the same language as the original bill. It just clarifies that there's a standing appropriation of money from the bond account that's created for the challenge program bonds. And then at starting at 2.27, a $2.4 million appropriation is made from the general fund, less however much is been provided for the debt service on the bonds back to the challenge program. So the net effect is to not reduce the challenge program except the funding, general fund appropriations to the challenge program aren't reduced except by the amount needed to cover the debt service that the agency needs to pay any bonds that they choose to issue for the challenge program. And then finally, at 2.32, there's a statement that the agency is required to submit to the legislature on how much that transfer and debt service amount actually is.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Are there questions from committee members? Representative Severson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I kind of understand this is a direct appropriation from the general fund. Is this going to have to go, obviously, through finance and then through Chair Hausman?
Yep. Yes.
And then this would be incorporated into the general fund bonding process and then, again, subject to the 90-vote rule on the House floor.
No. Actually, this is a standalone bill. It's not part of the general bonding bill. And my understanding is it goes through that committee to be reviewed, make sure that it's okay. But it's not a separate, it doesn't require the supermajority's presence. Oh, Mr. Burris, maybe you want to clarify that?
Madam Chair and Representative Severson, that's my understanding as well. This would not be a general obligation of the state, so these aren't GO bonds. These are bonds issued by the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, but the debt service payment is coming from a standing appropriation of the state that the legislature could choose to remove in the future, and in which case the agency would have to find another revenue source, the same way that it's the same mechanism essentially that works for the nonprofit housing bonds that were enacted, I think, in 2008.
Just a follow-up, Madam Chair.
Representative Severson.
So understanding this, then, this does not bind future legislatures for the obligation of the funds, so then Minnesota Housing Finance Agency would bear the responsibility for the continued backing of the bonds. Is that the way I'm reading this?
For the continued issuing of the bonds. Go ahead, Mr. Burris. Why don't you just...
Mr. Chair, Representative Cedarston, I would say that's correct in the sense that, you know, a legislature can't find a future legislature. There is a standing appropriation, so absent any future legislative activity, general fund dollars would go towards paying the debt service, but the legislature could choose in future years to eliminate that appropriation.
Okay. And I guess just a follow-up, Madam Chair, I'm just kind of curious as to what would preclude other committees from doing something similar to this, going outside of what we usually do as a second-year bonding proposal, putting them all together and then bringing them through the process on their merits. But if we start each committee individually submitting some potential for further bonding propositions here, I'm just wondering if there's some general guidance here that gives us, you know, some constraints of which to operate within.
Well, I think the thing to remember here is this authority to do this kind of bonding was granted 2 years ago to just a couple of, to the Housing Finance Agency, and I think maybe the same year or the year before at the University of Minnesota. It's been very limited application of this. I don't see a wholesale breakout of agencies being allowed to do bonding, and I think it might have been one more place. I think there might be two. I think there's one more place in the state, but anyway, it's very limited. And I think the point here is that an agency with some experience in already doing this, they have $30 million in 208. We're just asking to do that again. The thing that's changed from with this amendment as compared to the last one is that it does meet the concern that was raised by the agency in terms of covering the full faith and credit. Them having to back it in that way. It'll now be through the general fund, and so that has the state's backing if they are issued. And you might notice that still on 2.18, this is permissive. The agency may establish this challenge fund program. Any further,
Madam Chair? One question.
Sure.
Will this require 81 votes?
My understanding is that it does not. Because it is a standing appropriation will be used for bonding. It can be used for bonding, but it's not a, this is my understanding, and if Mr. Burris may want to correct me, but I think that's correct.
Madam Chair, members, that's my current understanding as well.
We'll be double checking if there's any questions. Going through Representative Howes, Representative Howes is going through Representative Hausman's committee, you know, for a good look after it leaves here. And in fact, that will be the motion today, that it goes to Finance Committee on its way to Representative Hausman's committee. And we've talked with her about it. She's an author of the bill. We don't expect any problems with it. We've been talking about it for more than a month. The tweaking that we were able to do now, I think, takes care of some of the concerns that people had about whether, you know, who was it backed by the agency or by the general fund. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed it was on the end of our agenda for today, and I think earlier the agency was here. I don't see them here now. If I remember right, they had testified originally that they didn't think they'd be able to sell these bonds, and I'm wondering, Madam Chair, have you talked to them? Do they think now with the amendment that this will work?
Representative McNamara, we have tried to call them today, and I thought Ms. Blankenship was here earlier, and we are... You know, I'm certainly willing to, if you want to wait. The reason we moved it up is because it was the next bill on the agenda last time, and it got short shrift. We weren't able to finish it. We didn't even get to it because of more discussion on the other bill. So I just wanted to make sure that we can move this on because we need to get it to the next committee But if you want to wait until we can hear from Ms. Blankenship, that's fine. I don't know where she is. We have called her before the committee meeting to let her know about this. We actually called Ms. Orr, and she's gone for a couple days, I guess, so.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. I just would hope that we could hear from the agency. I don't know what the amendment does, if that really changes their thoughts on being able to sell the bonds, because if I heard Mr. Burris right, it doesn't seem like there's any guarantee in the future that money will be available to pay the bonds. And does the agency think they actually can sell the bonds under the scenario we're in now? When they testified before, I think they said they didn't expect they'd be able to sell them based on the constraints.
My understanding, Representative McNamara, is that they were concerned about marketability because they didn't think it was backed by anybody except their agency. And what we're doing here is we're backing it by the full faith and credit of the state, is my understanding. And Representative Morgan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative McNamara, there are several of us who shared the concern you're expressing right now, particularly from the testimony of the agency last time. I think this language certainly takes a big step towards addressing the concern that they expressed and that they expressed to me in a private conversation. And I also am soothed, if you will, by the permissive nature of the language, that we are not requiring the agency to take this course. We're only providing an option to do something different in extraordinary times. So that's, if that helps. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Blaine, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. There we go. I'm not understanding how a standing appropriation of the state, does that mean that they are guaranteed to get that appropriation every year?
Mr. Burris, do you want to explain to us again? I think we just need to hear it again, how it works.
Madam Chair, Representative Lane, yes, they would get that appropriated amount every year as a standing appropriation. The distinction is between the appropriations that are made through the biennial budget process, and that requires, you know, enactment of the budget. Standing appropriations are set in statute at a particular amount and are ongoing until the legislature, you know, makes a change to statute. So it would be an amount that would be appropriated to them annually.
So then, Madam Chair,
Representative Lane,
how is that different from when we set our budgets each year? At any point, that could be cut back, is my understanding, or not?
Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair and members, the budget that you said each couple of years is based on the, you know, legislative priorities of the committee and the legislature and targets. The standing appropriation could also be adjusted as part of that budgetary process. So it doesn't, the standing appropriation doesn't require affirmative action on the part of the legislature, whereas the biennial budget does.
Thank you.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the concerns that I have with this, again, is we're in a $994 million budget shortfall this year. We're looking at $5 billion to $8 billion in the next biennium. And now we're obligating another $2.4 million on top of the general fund. And there's going to be places to look for generating some of those revenues, of which this is going to be one that I think is going to be looked at significantly at future legislatures. I think I've got some serious concerns that we're putting additional price tag on a future that we are still grappling with, and we're doing it. And another thing that causes me the concern here is that we're putting this $2.4 million appropriation on, and in the guise that Minnesota Housing Finance Agency is the keeper of the bonds here, and how do they negotiate if in a future legislature that gets kicked out of the general fund, and now they have $2.4 million that they have to take out of their operating budget in order to back the bonds? And it just seems to me a kind of a house of cards, and I feel a lot better if Minnesota Housing Finance agency who just walked through the door could give us a little more background on this process. Not to put you on the spot as soon as you come through the door, Ms. Blankship, but Madam Chair, as she comes down, I think, you know, the concerns are, I think, and many of us share it here in the committee, is that we are kind of putting out additional obligations for the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency other than the ones that we've currently got, and could jeopardize their future, the ability or the stability of their future budget. But maybe Ms. Blankenship can.
Well, and let me just say welcome to the committee, Ms. Blankenship. We did try to call you this morning so we could give you a heads up on this, and we found out that Ms. Orr was gone, and we didn't get a response from you. But we're happy you're here now. And what I want to say, one other way to look at it is to say we are giving them additional resources. In fact, incredibly additional resources. Instead of just having the $2 million appropriation, they will now have the option, and this is in their base budget. This is already there, unless you want to cut that. This is in their base budget. And this would allow them to do a bonding with that, bringing in potentially, we think, around $30 million at a time when we have incredible need for housing investment. We need the jobs that are created with that. We need the revenue that's created with that, and so on. So I would put a positive spin on it rather than a negative spin. I think we're really assisting the agency in this way. We wanted to let you know about this change that we were able to come up with. And if you have not had a chance to look at it, maybe I could have Mr. Burris just explain briefly what the change is so that you can catch your breath and make sure that you know what we're talking about. We did change this bill to try to meet some of the concerns the agency had about how the bonds would be backed. And this time they would not be backed by the agency, they would be backed by the state. So I'm going to let Mr. Burris go ahead and explain this. The general fund of the state.
Madam Chair, Ms. Blankenship. The amendment reduces the base appropriation for the challenge program by $2.4 million and creates a standing appropriation of $2.4 million less the amount of debt service necessary for the challenge bonds. So the general fund appropriation is made for the challenge program, but it's reduced so that those funds could be provided for any debt service that's necessary. So it would roughly parallel the nonprofit housing bonds, but the funding, instead of being additional general fund dollars, would be a reduction to the challenge program.
Ms. Blankenship.
Madam Chair, I'm Jeanette Blankenship with Housing Finance. Apologies for not being here. Need to be in three places at once right now. We appreciate making a standing appropriation for this. I think we did express our reservations last week when Ms. Orr was here, and it still isn't increasing the amount available for affordable housing. And I think that's one of our main concerns, is by reducing our base budget in the long term for these next 20 years by $2.4 million a year, it's a short-term gain, and we know there are needs. We also know the future is uncertain, and we want to be sure that there's also funding available then. So we do appreciate the change in standing appropriation, but there are plenty of concerns that give us pause on issuing bonds out of the current budget for the short term that has this long-term impact.
And did you understand that if the bonds are not issued, the money is there for you to be used in the manner that you have already available to you?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, and so to you, you would just assume not do bonding, additional bonding? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Madam Chair, we would assess the bond market and be sure that even with the standing appropriation that these don't have a higher risk because of the uncertainty of the state's future and their financial situation. So we understand that we do not have to issue bonds, and we appreciate that, but I think you all would be expecting bonds to be issued if it's possible, and we would want to have a frank conversation about that.
Well, there's nothing that prevents us, Ms. Blankenship, from having a frank conversation about this at any time, and what we're proposing here does give you the permission to do the bonding. You choose not to do it, then you have the use of the, my understanding is you have the use of the appropriation right in your budget. So I guess if you're not interested in doing bonds, that would still be something that you could do. I guess we would like to encourage you to do that, and that's what we're doing with this. We're giving you an option that you don't now have. Representative Benson.
Just a point of information, how long does this authorization continue? Is there a end date on it, or?
No, as I understand it, the way it's written, Representative Benson, there's not an end date on it.
All right, and I'm just suggesting, you know, we're going to be having the voters make decisions on the composition of the legislature in the governor's office. And so one doesn't know, as we don't know about the economy, what the results of that may be.
Correct.
So I see use in having this ability for the housing department in the future months or years.
Okay, Representative Hayden, and then we're going to...
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be brief. I guess it's kind of a statement and a question for Ms. Blankenship. If this legislation is permissive, if it's giving you, the agency, some flexibility and taking a look at the bond market to see if there's an opportunity to get more bonds, if that makes sense. And today you're, you know, saying that you don't think that it will. But I guess what I'm trying to figure out is what is the problem with legislation going through that is permissive, that allows to give you more authority to bond if you feel like, if we together feel like that there is a need in order to get more resources into projects that have come to testify over and over that they need resources to move forward. People like Alan Arthur from Aon and others have said that this money would be helpful. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, is your position simply principle, or is it because you just don't like the idea of bonding out of the challenge fund, or is there an opportunity for us in these times to be as flexible as we possibly can and give you the opportunity to do that if indeed it makes good fiscal sense?
Ms. Blankenship.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden. We agree there is a need, and we do have an RFP coming out in April that will have several million dollars available for many of these projects to move forward. There's also a chance that the tax credit gap financing will be extended. So we are looking at there's opportunities that there'll be plenty of ways to move projects forward this next year. I think we are open to flexible and new ideas. We are able to bond. We issue revenue bonds frequently. And those, though, have to be paid back, and so that's why we have to reach higher incomes with those. What you're looking to do here is to use current appropriations to pay off bonds that we would issue so we can reach lower income levels, but you're also then reducing the ability to have that cash available now, next year, and the next year, and the next year by front-loading it all. So it's just a more than $40 million impact for less than $30 million in the short term. So we recognize that it's a valuable tool that could be possible. It just, I think, one, does set a precedent about looking at the agency and issuing bonds and paying for out-of-agency appropriations. If you want to get more bonds in the future, nonprofit housing bonds, what would be the reason to have MMB pay for it if you start a precedent of paying for bonds out of the agency budget? So I think there are some ramifications to consider, and that's why we're hesitant on this bonding tool coming out of the agency budget. If there are additional resources that were found to pay for these, it would make sense. It's basically like a nonprofit housing bond under the challenge program rules.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Rosenthal and McNamara, we are going to vote on this. We're not going to talk it to death. We've had two previous hearings on this, and so I'd like to...
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Blankenship. I just want to sort of echo what Representative Morgan said. We're in no way, by my reading, giving the agency a mandate. It's just another tool that you might consider and doesn't bind you in any way to have to let the bonds, as I understand it.
Thank you. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm a little confused, Ms. Blankenship. If you do let the bonds, I think I'm understanding that we're cutting the challenge program $40 million over the next 20 years. What kind of stuff won't get done if we cut this program $40 million over the next 20 years?
Ms. Blankenship, I think you should answer his question. If his understanding is right, I think that's what he's first asking. And then
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, I don't have my housing assessment report with me, but some of you might. And I would take a look at that and see what our average is per unit under challenge. Let's say it's $10,000 per unit on average that's spent. Then in the short term, you're going to be able to do that much work. But then a quarter of that, the 10,000 times that 10 million extra that's spent, that's lost in the long term, would then be units that weren't assisted because of the short term infusion. Does that make sense?
Follow up, Ms. Representative McNamara, then we're going to go on.
So if I understand it right, the money's used for the same things, whether it's in the base funding or whether it's bonded. So it would just be, we would lose this $10 million worth of things over the next 20 years that wouldn't happen by doing this. So the net effect, if you issue the bonds, you're going to be able to help less people?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, in theory that is correct, because you are reducing the base budget by, in the long term, by more than the bonds are issued for.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative McNamara, the final question?
Blankenship, if you have $10 million less, you got to do less. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Madam Chair, I just asked for a roll call when
sure,
we vote.
That's fine. And let me just, members, make a final point here. We're talking about releasing $30 million right now at a time when we have a huge crisis, and we're making it possible for the agency to do this. They're still in the driver's seat, and I'm actually a little bit shocked that they don't find this to be something that they would want to do, since they had talked about having, although the governor squashed it, they had proposed to the governor to have additional bonding authority to do this very kind of thing. So we're coming back and saying we're going to bring it forward as a bill, and we'd like it to be considered by the agency, and I would hope that we would have a different kind of response from the agency today. So, committee members, I think what we've done is met some of the concerns that people had about the full faith and credit and other resources. I want to just say we've had a lot of testimony about how this type of construction returns the money back to us in a very short period of time. So I'd like to take the roll call. We've already voted on the amendment. The roll call, please.
Clark?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Bly?
Aye.
Hayden?
Yes.
House? Huntley?
Yes.
Lane?
No.
McFarland? McNamara?
No.
Morgan?
Aye.
Rosenthal? Saylor?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Severson?
No.
The motion prevails 8-4, and the bill is passed and as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. And our standing is from there it goes to the Capital Investment Committee. Okay, members, next we have Representative Severson's bill before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, and I would move House File 3597 be passed and referred to probably Finance for...
Representative Severson moves House File 3597 be passed, and I think what we would be doing with this would be putting it into the omnibus bill layover for a possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right. And Madam Chair and members, we had a little bit of this discussion a while back when we had the different departments coming in that were testifying that this committee has its oversight for, and this was one of the things that kind of came to my attention was that when they generate the revenues through the licensing fees or penalties or some of those other things, it goes into a special fund and then becomes a target of a balanced budgeting act that we have been on a continuing road for. And I think one of the issues that our constituents deal with and frustrates them more than any is that we appropriate funds through licensing processes and we extract using these different committees for
kind of like milking a cow and going, taking those funds for the general fund, which turns out to be a black hole. And I think the agencies, the different departments, have been very frugal with their dollars, but we have, in this fiscally constrained time, continued to cut them back. This bill is kind of meant to give them a little more self-determination. And, Madam Chair, I'd like to propose an oral amendment, if I could, before we go any further with the bill. Okay. And that would be on line 1.12. After the word collected, insert by the health-related licensing board. And then further on in that sentence, after only by the and insert health-related licensing boards, and complete the sentence identified in this section.
You better give that to us again, if you could, please.
Okay. In line 1.12, after the word, the first word collected in the line, insert by the health-related licensing board. Then the sentence continues on, may be used only by the, and then insert health-related licensing.
Okay. Does everybody have that?
And that that goes to the issue that there are, I believe, three boards in our complement of boards that are addressed in this statute that are collected through the health licensing agency, or the Department of Health. And that allows them the authority to retain those funds within that particular department.
Any questions on the amendment? It puts in the form that the author wants. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. And you now have the bill before you as amended. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I think, you know, the I think the key issues in this bill that we were working on, and again, this is a kind of a work in process. This is one of those concepts that we wanted to bring before the board, before the committee, and have some discussion on, is that when our founding fathers, I believe, when our founding fathers originally had the intent of government, if there were places of government that were generating their own revenue, that those places that are generating the revenue had the ability to use those funds rather than use them for a general fund acquisition, particularly in these the boards that we have oversight in this committee, are through their licensing and operations generating funds. And the as I understand it, the legislature determines what their budget is going to be, and then any funds that are above that budget are put into the special fund. And that special fund accrues money. Well, when that accrues money, it becomes kind of a target for any time we run into a deficit situation where it's just straggling money that's sitting out there. The problem is, with a special fund, oftentimes with the committees, the boards that are contributing into that fund may run into a legal challenge, as we saw with the Board of Veterinary Medicine and some of the other ones, where they have one-time imposed legal fees or some of the other challenges. And when we rob those funds out of that special revenue fund, we now compel them to try and find the money someplace else, and then they end up raising their fees, which aren't necessarily their fault. And so rather than do that, I think there needs to be, in this provision, a discussion as if we're going to have a special revenue fund, we need to have that held harmless by appropriations from the general fund to backfill the black hole, per se, and allow those different boards to have the authority to access those funds, much like an insurance pool, if you will. And so if there is more monies that are retained in there, what we would like to see is those boards begin to reduce their fees, reduce the licensing fees, and try and regulate the pool that way rather than have it being continually targeted by the general fund. And so, Madam Chair, that's my understanding on what this bill does, and I would open it for discussion. And hopefully we can, if there are other thoughts here, we can amend those or craft the bill as needed. I believe that's part of what the committee process is supposed to be about.
Okay, any questions from committee members? Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Severson, for bringing this forward. I like this conceptually, the idea that the money that is dedicated, that these boards raise, stay in their area. I think the problem that I'm having is when I think about it at the 50,000-foot level, so even committees that aren't necessarily in this committee. So I serve in a committee with Representative Huntley as the chair, where we're taking money that has been appropriated to the state for low-income families. And that money is being rerouted to the general fund to help with the state's deficit. And so, I mean, like $100 million in the last 5 years, about $29 million in one fund and $28 million in another kind of piece of legislation that the governor has proposed. And so, though I like this in concept, I think someone on the House floor kind of said what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I think I hear that a lot. So where I'm concerned, and probably where I won't be supportive of your legislation, is not because it's not good legislation, it's that I don't think it's being applied across kind of the legislature as a whole, and that this practice of raiding kind of funds, no matter who they're for, and in this case it is for our boards, for our professional staff, but in another reason it might be for low-income families, or there, I'm sure there are other committees that I don't sit on that this is happening as well. And so I would want to see a much more comprehensive reform of these practices in terms of raiding funds that go into the general fund that were meant for something else before I could support your piece of legislation.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, how to eat an elephant. This is the beginning of reform in government. This is the beginning of what we need to do across the board here. And I would probably use the analogy that with the Health and Human Services side for low-income families, there are many benefits that those revenue sources reciprocate from the general fund. So there's a direct correlation there that they are receiving benefits from the general fund, and therefore when they pay into the general fund, there's a give-and-take relationship. But the boards in particular here, the boards are contributing through the licensing process the revenues that generate, that run their boards. And any excess monies are going into the special fund, which is then raided by the general fund. The problem is that if we raid that, and then there's additional requirements for fiduciary commitments to those boards because of legal action or some other things that take place within those boards, now they have to find another place to generate because they aren't getting it from the general fund. They would have to come back here and say, hey, we've got this special need right now that the general fund has to take care of. And typically, because we're in a budget crunch, we don't give that. We just say, you guys are going to have to raise your fees to do that. And so they are continual givers in this process without really receiving. So we continually raid their special revenue fund, and then when they don't meet the need, then they have to raise their fees to do that. And so I think it's a little different than the examples that you're talking about, although I agree that if there are issues with the with other sides of government, this is the model that we should be moving towards, so there is some accountability in the government process, and it doesn't all turn into a black hole that people are just drawing from on a regular basis without knowing where the revenue source is coming from.
Madam Chair, just to follow up, I mean, I think I do believe the committee is where we debate this. I don't want to debate the merits of, you know, refinancing $100 million of income of money that was slated for low-income families back into the general fund. I mean, I just frankly find that appalling, and would love for that practice to start. But I think many of the same principles that you're using with respect to this is the same issue, that if folks are falling into despair because of the economy and need some help for a job training program, because that's what the program is, in order for them to get back on their feet, that money should be available, and that's exactly what it was appropriated for. I don't want to turn this into a kind of TANF discussion, if you will, because I don't think that that's what we're here for, but I do think that those same principles can be used across the board, and that I would like to see a much broader discussion and really a much more bipartisan discussion about these issues on really large chunks of money. And if I started to see that, if I started to feel that, if I started to feel like we are going to in earnest have this broad how do you eat an elephant conversation, then I would be much more interested in kind of looking at some of these smaller pots of money. So, you know, to that end, I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I don't necessarily think this is where we should start. But
okay. Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to kind of piggyback on your comments. Representative Severson, you know, there are a lot of these areas, for example, the 2% provider tax, which is, you know, everyone was promised that if they acquiesced and paid this tax, then we would continue to fund Minnesota Care, for example. There's another area that has been abused, and my view always was that if you're going to tax and dedicate it like that, or these, and you choose not to do that, then you should get rid of that tax because you made a promise. Right. And I've watched the legislature and the governor, too, abuse the Minnesota Care Fund rating it time and time again. Would you consider expanding your bill to include those kinds of areas as well?
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Benson. You know, what I'd like to see is this bill implemented for our board's process, so they're made whole on this and that there is some protections that they have so they can operate within the confines. See if that works. See if we can make that work. Use it as a pilot program, and then in the future, if that's working and there is appetite for it, then move on to the next phase and say, you know what, I believe that the rest of our government ought to run much like this small ecosystem, and there ought to be accountability. I share the concerns with the provider tax, the 2%, and it does. That kind of goes to the core of this bill, is that it turns into a cash cow, and we continue to milk that cow until we don't feed it any hay anymore, and then they die. So, I mean, this is my intent would not be to expand it beyond this particular scope, to try and bring some accountability into this provision, see how it works, and then if we can make it work, then I think carry it out to other parts of the government structure.
Thank you. I know we have some witnesses here who want to testify. I just have a couple quick questions before we go to them. The total cost of the bill?
And do I have the analyst here?
Madam Chair.
Oh.
And members, it looks like...
It's agents.
And again, this is... There'd be no cost to the general fund. This would be money that would be appropriated out of the state government special revenue fund to the board's revenue that they had raised. And so the difference in fiscal year 2010 between the base appropriation that was in this, the line that's crossed off on line 1.18 of $14,034,000. So the difference there is $113,000 in the first year. The second year, yeah, I believe it's...
And then it's 211.
Yeah, $211,000 total.
Okay. Thank you. And just one other point. There is no requirement in your bill that the that these... fees are returned to the boards that they reduce their fees. But you mentioned that was your hope, but there's nothing in the bill that requires that, correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay.
But I think in light of that, I think one of the intents on this bill as it would move forward would be that we could put an amendment down that says that if the special reserve fund reaches a certain amount, and I would hope that the boards could get together and negotiate that amount, if it reaches that point, then those monies would be subject to giving up to the general fund, or they could reciprocate by reducing their fees commensurate with the excess. And that would be, I think, a provision that would be reasonable.
Okay. Well, this bill will be laid over for potential inclusion, and it could be something you could work on, Representative Severson.
Okay.
So is there any further discussion, and do any of the boards want to testify, the boards that are mentioned? Three boards, I believe. I know many of you came today, and so welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Severson, for bringing this bill forward. This committee sat very patiently through 2 days of testimony with the executive directors of the health-related boards, listening to what the impact of the governor's budget proposal on the cuts in the budget proposal would do for our agencies. During that discussion, there seemed to be an appreciation and an understanding and an appetite for making the type of change that this bill presents to you. And I'm a little surprised, I guess, to hear that there doesn't seem to be the kind of support that you had for this action just weeks ago. But basically, Representative Severson has presented the benefits of this bill very well. The boards have typically tried, in fact, we're statutorily required to set our fees to meet our appropriation needs. And that's something that we do. Our board in particular reduced its fees back in 1999 and has, since over that last 10 years, has reduced any reserve that we've had in the special revenue fund. Truly, that's been done not only with the reduction of fees, but it's been done by the assistance of the monies being swept away. I don't have particular expertise in the financing part of this. Others of my colleagues do, but I just wanted to just come back and say thank you. We had that conversation, and hopefully we can, as you said, start here and make a point that these are funds that are collected for a specific fee, and they should be spent that way. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
One question I might have, and maybe this is for the author, but you noticed that I had the bill that actually returned all of the fees to all the boards, and I noticed that you picked and chose several. Can you describe your rationale for that, and maybe we could hear from the witness, too, if that seems like the appropriate ones were chosen or there are others?
Can you explain that, Madam Chair? I'm not
I'm
sure.
I'm just wondering, the ones that you chose just several organizations to, several boards to have their funding returned to them, but not all of the boards?
Well, and Madam Chair, I guess my intent was to include all of the boards, but I think there was a provision in this process, and perhaps these were the boards I think that were making larger contributions and contributing to the general fund, where the other ones pretty much operate just on the fees that they produce. So these would have been the boards. These would have been the boards that typically collect more, and those monies go into the general fund and contribute to the general fund. Mm.
So your intention is that it covers all of the boards?
It would be an easy thing to do that, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Representative Lane, did you have a question? Comment?
Yes, my comment is that there's many areas that we have been taking fees that go from people under the assumption that they're going to cover a particular thing, and then we take it for the general fund and turn it into a tax that nobody knows is a tax. And I think that's something that we need to clarify, and you're doing that in this. I hearken to the firefighters training, which the bump we have on our homeowners insurance, which we willingly pay as a fee to make sure that our firefighters are trained to come and protect our homes, and unbeknownst to us, that is then turned into a tax because it goes into the general fund. If we're going to do it as a general fund need, then we should say so. We should be clear. I think people need to know what is actually being used for taxes. Otherwise, there's a distrust that builds up. They can then argue about how large the tax is, but they don't have to fear that it's being manipulated in some way. So I actually, although the consequences for this year and in the next few years will be very difficult, I like the philosophy, I like the idea of this, and I will join you with it.
Madam Chair, just to that point,
mm-hmm.
Representative Lane, I appreciate that. I think one of the things that we as government representatives, as politicians, you might say, get raked over the coals for is doing just that. Is we say, hey, paying this money, and then we use the money for something else. And to the public, that's disingenuous. It's flat out lying to them. So I think it's one of the issues that we need to address just to bring credibility back to the process and say, we're going to tell you what we're going to be doing, and we're going to do it. And so I think that's what this kind of starts with.
Representative Severson, I may be corrected that each of these each of the boards receive the revenue that they bring in. But you did choose, I think, three that you increased the appropriations to. So you're treating several differently, and I'm just trying to understand how you made those choices. The Board of Nursing Home Administrators, the Board of Marriage and Family Therapy, and the podiatrist, I guess it is.
Which board are you
representing? Okay.
Madam Chair, I think we can get some clarification.
Okay. Hi. My name is Julie Banks. This is my with the Administrative Services Unit. The three boards that we have identified here that are struggling and need an increase in their spending authority to make it are the Board of Marriage and Family Therapy. We were asking for a base increase of $22,000 each year just to cover their current salaries of the positions within the boards and some of the operation costs. And they had a few changes that drove this to this. They use a national testing facility to that tests all of their licensees. And the testing increased a fee back to the board of $7,500 per year to accommodate for ADA accommodations while the individuals are taking the test. And so that was part of the increase there. The other one is a one-time increase of $25,000 to finish their rule writing. Now, they've had a one-time increase of this rule writing for the last three different bienniums that we canceled back because of different rules and things that have gone through that they worked with the Department of Human Services on. And now we're at a point, again, where we can move forward to finish the new rule changes.
Are you referring to which board?
That was the Board of Marriage and Family Therapy.
Okay, you're still on that one, all right.
Yep. The next board is the Board of Nursing Home Administrators. The increase there is $51,000 the first year and $61,000 the second year. This is totally related to the Volunteer Healthcare Provider Program that we purchase malpractice insurance to those volunteers, doctors, nurses, and dentists out there in the community. Right now, I have at least 10 applications sitting on my desk that I cannot purchase malpractice insurance for, and I'm telling people that we have to put them on hold or no longer admit any new volunteers into our program. We've run out of funding for that program, and this will just get us through the next biennium, hopefully. I do see a huge increase in the number of volunteers out there working in the small clinics, helping individuals out. And then the last board increases for the Board of Podiatric Medicine. It was a $15,000 each year base increase. And this is to cover the fringe benefit, the health insurance for the one person that works for the board. We have a new executive director that was just recently hired. The executive director that worked prior for the board for years did not take health care. And when we brought this individual on, we offered the position to them, including the standard fringe benefits. And we can't fund the fringe benefits for the individual. And again, just part of that will be for that, and a little part just for operations of the board. So that will just the three increases so, that we've included.
So, Ms. Vagnus, these are your recommendations to Representative Severson of the boards that should have the appropriations increased?
Yes.
So this came from you. Okay. Right. Well, I remember being concerned about some of the other boards too. You know, I remember, if I recall, I think it was the Board on Pharmacy that oversees the chemical.
Yes.
Health issues, and it might also be the chemical health board, who talked about, you know, people not even being able to get jobs because of the backup of their ability to provide licensing, the lack of supervision of pharmaceutical organizations all over the state, and we hear a lot about abuse of pharmaceutical drugs right now. Did any of those come into your purview too, or how did you pick and choose?
These three particular increases were increases that we had put forward last fall when the budgets were just starting the process, and they were not included in the governor's proposed budget. The Board of Pharmacy has the, I forgot the name of their program, but it's the chemical, the controlled substance program. There is a separate bill out there right now that I just finished the fiscal note on that is running on its own as an increase for the Board of Pharmacy to continue with that controlled substance monitoring program. Some of the other boards, yes, they do have very, very tight budgets, but we felt that during the times that we are right now, we will be able to just struggle to get through, and that's why we did not increase other boards' appropriated spending authorities, and we're hoping that next summer when we start working on the next biennium, we can address some of those other issues.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Anybody else who wants to address the committee? Looks like
yes.
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Shirley Breck, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Nursing. I just wanted to follow up on Representative Severson's position that if the fund grows too large, that the individual board should reduce their fees. I would like to remind the legislature that two bienniums ago, the Board of Nursing actually came in with a proposal to reduce the renewal fee by $10 biennially, because the auditors had told us that we had too much money in the special reserve fund. The way that it was dealt with was a little over $2 million then was swept from the special revenue fund of nurse licensure fees to the general fund rather than reduce the licensure fee. So I think I'm back to really identifying that the monies that are collected by the licensing boards are done so for the purpose of regulating the professionals who pay that fee. And that's why they believe they pay that fee. That's why they sought to be regulated. And I think it's just really very important to look at historically how it has become, as Representative Severson has pointed out, is, you know, a nice little a bank account to go to rather than the funding being used for its intended purpose.
Any further testimony? Representative Severson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. You know, and I think this, you know, to Representative Hayden's point, at some point we have to start some of these reforms. And I think this is a small microcosm. It's a good place to start. I think it also would send a message that we're listening and we're starting some of those reforms, and I would ask for your support.
Okay. So this bill, House bill 3597 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Committee members, we're going to adjourn here. We've lost a big portion of our committee. We have the minutes of two meetings.
I'll move those.
Representative Scott moves the March 23rd and March 17th minutes. Any discussion, corrections? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and both of those minutes are adopted. Committee members, I just want to talk with you real briefly. We're going to be meeting. We all have a little break now to celebrate Passover and Easter and spring and whatever else might be celebratable in those periods of times. We'll be coming back next Tuesday and have before us our the Tuesday after our break. That's right. Two Tuesdays, no way. And we'll be talking with the committee members about our omnibus bill that deals with the health part of our budget. And I want to just encourage all members, we are going to, our target is a $1.6 million cut. And so I would like to get recommendations from all the folks of the committee. And I think we may have set up meetings already, or we are in the process, or we're in the process of setting up meetings with each of the caucuses to get your input on that. So be thinking about that. And we'll be finishing up several other bills that are that have come to us in the meantime, and I imagine there'll be a few more too. So unless there's any further discussion, the meeting is adjourned.